Okay, guys, this is going to be part two. When I got done with that, I had a few more thoughts on the cash flow that I'm going to go ahead and sling this in there. So instead of me taking the time to edit all this together, it's just going to be a part one and part two. Still talking about the cash flow, everything like that. First off, if you ever talk to people that go to college and they take business courses, you're going to find out that they are very open to the idea of getting loans. These loans are for the simple purpose of not having to manage cash flow and using someone else's money to keep your head above the water. And that's very common. Most bigger businesses and a lot of smaller businesses, I'm pretty sure a lot of trapping supply dealers do this, is instead of having to take money out of their account, they go borrow money and they're thinking, like, say at 5%, if they're selling at a profit of 20% or 30%, and it's only going to cost them 5% to use somebody else's money for the year, they're going to not make as much profit, but it'll even out the cash flow, which I guess in a way, from a numbers point of view, that'll work. Certain business, like when I've talked to Chip before about what it's like to farm and you go get those really, really big loans and it's due every year and it's based off the crop and stuff like that, that's a common way for that to do that. A lot of bigger businesses or even mom and pop stores, they get loans on a weekly basis to cover cash flow. Some of them do it for a quarter, some of them do it for a half a year, some of them do it for a full year. And it's a way to kind of cover up what's going on inside of the business. But let me warn you against that. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm not saying you can't do it. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But from an entrepreneur's point of view, everything you do with your business has risk. Those risks can come back and bite you in the butt and put you out of business. I'm going to use trapping for an example because most of us can understand this in a way that you can get. What was it? 5-6 years ago, it seemed like fur prices, or may even been longer than that, fur prices were crazy. You know, cats were bringing a couple $100 for a nice one. Muskrats were bringing 10 and 13, and raccoons were in the 25. And I mean, you go out, you put a little effort into trapping, you could make some decent money, which meant people all of a sudden spent more money on the supply business. They wanted more traps. They wanted more lure. They wanted more stakes. They wanted more gear. You know, everything. It was easy to justify that from the trapper's point of view because there was more money coming in. I mean, it's a big difference to them if they're selling a muskrat at, say, an average of $9 or $10 or $11 a piece or $3 a piece. So they get excited and they want to get more 110s and stuff like that. Now, here's where the risk comes in to borrowing money, to cover cash flow. I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. But you just need to be aware of what that means. There was a lot of guys, from talking with them, about the year before, where, I mean, if you showed up at certain shows with 160s or 110s or 220s or whatever that animal was everybody was so fired up about, you would have to have an extra van bring more stuff. I mean, you sold out of it quick. I've been at certain shows by, like, say, 220s. Raccoons get up really high in a state. And you go to a show, and by, if it's a Friday, Saturday show, by 1 o'clock on Friday, there's not a 220 found on the whole premise for sale. Everybody that brought them sold them really, really quick. Now see, this gives the illusion of this is what it's always going to be. We can see this with government and bigger businesses and people's bank accounts. You get a little bit more money coming into your house because of a raise at work. All of a sudden now you go buy a new toy. You really didn't gain anything, but as soon as something happens to that business and your income goes back down, now you're underwater again because you don't have enough cash to cover what's going on. This happens in government. We get a big influx of economy, a bunch of money floods in. They just figure out a way to spend it. When the economy goes down, there's not as much taxes. Lo and behold, they got to go borrow more money. Businesses do this too, and it's something that's taught at school. I've talked to some very successful people that this is just the way that they think, because I believe it's simpler, and they would rather risk somebody else's money than their own money. I can kind of understand that to a point. I personally don't borrow money for business. To me, if you have to borrow money, this is different, like for what Chip was doing, because it was such a huge amount, or what farmers do. I was down with a young man many years ago in Louisiana, and he was taking out a $1.3 million loan for farming. I mean, I went into dry heaves and crying and crawled up in a fetal position just thinking about that night. You know, to him, it was kind of a normal thing. He was a little nervous, but it's just what you got to do. All those supply dealers that sold all that stuff when fur prices are high, so when the next season's coming around, fur prices start getting a little squirrely. They go and borrow money. I know supply dealers that would put second mortgages on their house to go get more stuff so they could make more money. Fur market goes down. They don't sell but half the stuff. It's completely irrelevant that they made a profit on what they sold. They have all the inventory. And now they've got this big loan payment, and they're just struggling, and the man and wife, they're getting in arguments all the time, and they're stressed out, and they can't sleep, and he's going to get a third job, and it's all based down to cash flow. So there is an option to borrow, but there's risk, and it's real risk to involve, because every time you do something like that, while that's out there, it gives the illusion that the water's lower in the swimming pool, but it's actually higher. If it pays off, then you're good to go. If it doesn't pay off, you're in big trouble. So just keep that in mind. Now, this is the main point that I want to do on this part two. You may be thinking, well, that you're talking about the lure business, that's specific. No, the construction business was the same way. It really wasn't. I just didn't understand it enough at the time to try to manage it. And, like I said, guys, I'm slinging it all out there. I'm being as open, as honest as I can about it. What I've learned over all these years of being self-employed and being an entrepreneur, I'm constantly looking for things that very smallly affect cash flow. But no matter what that is, eventually it's cash flow is going to become an issue. Unless you keep it at such a small scale, which is why we talk about in this course about having 3 to 5 revenue streams, that's the reason. Because you can keep it down to a point where it makes sense, because you're always going to hit a ceiling of easy sales, and then you're going to have to push and spend a lot more money to get more sales, but the profit starts getting upside down and your cash flow starts getting upside down. But if you pick 3 to 5 cash flows, get the first one up and going, start on your second one, then you start on your third one. Even if it takes 5 or 6, 10 years, didn't make any difference. But you keep it at the scale where cash flow is not that big of an issue, and the market ceiling is not that big of an issue for your social capital and for which you can sell easily. The world changes for you, the entrepreneur, as far as cash flow or even income, but definitely on cash flow. Now, some of the things that you can look at doing, which is really simple, like a cash flow thing to me, just think about this. Like I said, I'm being open and honest. And this is a dangerous thing for someone to do, because most people are never going to be honest with you when it comes to stuff like this. The business course to me is one of those things that's high income per anything that I have to put in it. I've got $4.99 that I pay to Vimeo to have this service that allows me to store so much data and stuff like that. I've got the website. I've had to pay a little bit to the web guy. I've had probably about 4 months of spending every other day a couple hours a day putting that up there. But now it's pretty much there. So if you buy the business course for $3.99, all of my work was done back then, and there's not a lot of cash flow issues with it. So it's a cash plus thing all the time because it's already made and it's on there. That's the type of stuff that you're looking for. But it's not like you're going to probably build all your income streams based off of something like this. It's really not. You can, like I've looked at doing some different courses with survival, like survival gardening. I've kind of talked to Tim about that. Doing it from a permaculture slant, which I know there's some people out there, but I really don't care. If once I go through, say, a couple of years with a camera and do all the editing and stuff like that, I already own the camera. It's not costing anything. I'm already doing the gardening, and I can do, say I spend an extra 3 hours every other week because I go plant potatoes on the side of the road and show you that no one even knows what it is, and you go dig the potatoes up, something like that. Not a lot of money involved. Once that course is done and it's uploaded, besides just the burn rate of having that course of Vimeo and some website stuff and a domain and a host and different things like that, which is not really that expensive, now it's cash flow on that particular product is really not an issue, but it can help me on other things that there is cash flow issues. So that's what really what you're looking at, is to try to at least have 50-50 of what you're doing of low impact to cash flow type stuff. You know, I've already given the example of doing instructions. When we were doing the trapping school down in Texas, there was a pretty big influx because we had the food cost of that thing was unbelievable. I cringe every time I think about what we spent on food for students down there. But that was really the only thing. So that was more of it was a different way of generating income than, say, selling lure or going to do ADC beaver work and you're driving all over the place and stuff like that. That was an add-on to something that I was doing. That was a stacking of functions. You know, I've been contacted by some people that want me to do consulting on permaculture. Now, I'll be honest with you, that is not something that I really had intended. I was doing everything from permaculture from a nursery point of view. Sell trees, sell plants, sell comfrey, stuff like that. That's what that revenue stream is. That's what I've been building up to do. But since I've had these people interested in me consulting, and some of them actually teaching at some of their facilities off and on, that's a very low barrier for any type of cash to me, because they pay for my fuel to get there, they pay for the motels or they put me up, and they're going to pay me for my time when I'm there. So let's say I go do a consulting job and I charge $700, but they cover all of my expenses. Now, really, then, only thing I got to think about, could I be doing better with something else if I'm working on another revenue stream? Possibly. But that's a low impact to the cash flow issue because there's not a whole lot there. Now, if that starts becoming a major part of the business, it's going to start chipping away to where the cash flow is going to be starting in, because now you're going to start looking at a lot of stuff online. You're probably going to have to get secretary. You're probably going to have to figure out different ways with more higher power computer type stuff to do graphics and all kind of stuff. Eventually that'll start creeping up. But if I keep it where, say, I do 10 consults a year and I could do $1,000 each, that's $10,000. And that's just coming easily and naturally and organically to me just because of the stuff I'm doing on YouTube and Instagram and the podcast. See, that's an easy revenue stream for me to do. And it's not going to really screw with a negative impact to cash flow because there's not really one. Same thing with planning. See, a business depends on the scale, and it depends on the end goal of what that business is, whether it's going to be a cash flow issue or not. When I do nursery stock, I'm going to give an example. Chip, when he lived down in Delta, at his place before he sold it, they had a pecan tree. I've ate those pecans. They produce like crazy every year. How do I know that? Chip's there every year. They're easy to crack. They're thin shelled. I sold to some of y'all of these last year. We went over in about 10 minutes and picked up a bunch of the pecans that were on the ground. I brought them back. I stuck them in a fridge that was in the lure shop, so I didn't go buy a fridge for that. I let them stratify in there. The next spring, I put them in tubs, which I already had, so I didn't have to go buy those. I put wire over to keep the squirrels out. I already had that, so I didn't have to buy that. The seeds were pretty much free, but you know, I mean, you can play around with the numbers at all times, but I was down there hunting anyway. And then I sold those for $5 a piece. So in reality, I didn't have anything in it, but I sold them for five or 10. I don't remember which one it is. Five or 10 a piece that I sold them. Now, I have another place that I get pecans that it's that I can go get the seed and stuff like that. Now, see, as long as I keep it in that scale and say I may move 500 of these a year, if that's the scale I keep it on and I put them on a website and I show them on Trapping Radio and, you know, I may take them to a deer show or something like that, but I keep it at that scale where I can just get the seeds pretty much for free. And then it's just me growing them out and I'm not putting them in pots and I'm not having to, you know, get soil for that. And I'm not having to weed and water them in pots and stuff like that. I'm selling them bare root. That's high profit, very low danger screwing with cash flow. Now, if I decide to get bigger in the nursery, here's where you have to manage your business. Say I can sell 1,000 pecan trees, real easy, not even trying. I start trying a little bit and I can sell 2,000. Now I've got to start doing more advertising. I got to start having them at certain sizes. I got to start putting them in pots, different things like that. Now the cash part of me going into that revenue stream is getting higher and higher. The water's getting higher in the swimming pool. Is it still going to be profitable? Yes. But it's still going to affect cash flow. It's still going to affect the water in the swimming pool. Now, if I go big time nursery, now see, what I'm talking about being a nursery is very small scale. Maybe, you know, a couple thousand pawpaw trees, 500 pecan trees, some chestnut trees, some Rose of Sharon, some comfrey, some Jerusalem artichokes, different things like that that I can grow and collect and resell basically from my own stock down the road. That's what I'm shooting for. If I have to start buying seed and greenhouses and tractors and having a bunch of labor and going out and doing a lot of advertising and all this stuff, the cash flow issues are becoming a difference. See, the smart revenue stream guy is going to keep it at that level where it's easy and it's extremely high profit. The moment that he starts feeling resistance for that, he backs away. He starts looking around. What else can I sell at extremely high profit where it's not a cash flow issue? And it could be maybe at a certain point, my jujube trees are succulent enough that I can start grafting off the rootstock that I dig up and put the limbs on there. I don't have anything really in it except maybe 20 cents in wax and some tape. Then I can sell those for $20 a piece. Well, that's $20 basically coming out of thin air with a little bit of my labor. But if I have to start hiring people to graft and dig up rootstock, it all changes. So the reason I'm saying that, you go look at a nursery, and I've been to nurseries and I've talked to bigger nurseries. They're most of the year completely drowning because of cash flow. Their outlays, their burn rates and their outlays in buying seeds and pots and soil and tractors and fuel and maintenance and insurance and labor and all this, it just keeps stacking up higher and higher and higher. And a lot of those nurseries struggle to make very much profit. Now see, this is where you can choose to be, not where you got the bragging rights. Well, I've got the biggest nursery in the state of Tennessee. We sell 55 billion trees. Yeah, I don't want that. I want to find those little niches that all of a sudden I can look at and go, up to a point, that's not going to affect cash flow very much, but it's going to be very positive on the income side. Big nursery, lots of outlay. My nursery, hardly any outlay. Am I going to gross what they do? No. My profit is probably going to be 60 times higher than theirs. But there's at a point where all of a sudden, every step you go up in the scale of your revenue stream, cash flows are going to start becoming more important. Because it's interesting. If you sell a widget, whether you make it or buy it, and you're selling $100,000 worth of widgets, what you will find out when you talk to businesses that scale up, you can sell 200 widgets and you only make about 20% more from the revenue stream coming in. Well, I want to make more money. So now you sell $300,000 worth of this widget. Because of cash flow, now you're making maybe 40% more than you did when you just sold $100,000. Because you got to get more employees and you're buying more stuff and you're doing all that. What I want you to think about with cash flow is stay away from it becoming an issue as much as possible. How hard is it to stay small? Depends on your ego and it depends on your discipline. Because I can tell you in my nursery, when I hit the spot where I need an employee for the nursery is now stopped growing. Or I may decide it's at the point where I need two employees. I can promise you it's never going to hit three. Why? Because the cash flow is now going to start becoming an issue. And you can control that. You can design your own income. But you have to think about this stuff. Most people have this big lick syndrome. They look at different things and they go, well, you know, I'm making $50,000 a year doing this, and that's, I only make $10,000. Ain't worth my time. Yeah, I'd much rather have 10 of the 5,000s than one of one job. It's more secure. And I can keep the sweet spots, and to me, I don't get as bored. And there's less risk involved in that than having one. I mean, it's a huge difference on that. But you can choose to, I mean, it's going to be really hard just to be completely online based where it's all streamable product. It's really hard to do that unless you're going to try to go out and be like a Tony Robbins. See, but even Tony Robbins, his business today, it takes a lot of money to do that. But Tony Robbins probably could have been making $500,000 a year being as good of a motivational speaker as he is with maybe a secretary. But he makes millions and he spends hundreds of thousands of dollars. You see how that happens? Every time that you move up, so your job, if you so choose to accept the mission, like Mission Impossible, is to find where you get resistance from a revenue stream, and then you just switch over, and you keep that one just where it is, where it's easy, it's simple, it's high profit. And then you switch over, and you find another one. And you build it up till you start feeling resistance, where you all of a sudden now you're like, man, I got to start like doing this and this and this and this to get more people to find me so I can sell. Stop. Find another one. That's when being an entrepreneur, at least from a revenue stream point of view, starts becoming extremely interesting. Because it's easier. For me to have a nursery to go from 10,000 to 100,000 is a lot of freaking work. But for me to go from a nursery where I'm, instead of looking at the business, I look at the revenue streams of trees. And then I can sell country roots. Then I might sell ginger starts. See, I'm looking at every one of those as a revenue stream, not the business. And I treat every one of them as a separate business, even though they may be housed under something else. I'm treating every one of those as a business. Soon as I feel resistance, got to back away. I can tell you, I could sell way more lure than I sell now, but I would not make very much more money. Does it make sense to sell more lure not to make that much more money? Not to me, it doesn't. But that's the way most people look at businesses. They want to grow. They want to scale. I mean, it's like I said, it's called the big lick syndrome is what I call it. You got to have the big lick or it ain't worth my time. Well, you know, it's fine with me. That makes it easier for me to do what I want to do. So even though you may have come to this course thinking of the thing, as soon as you feel resistance, once you get it up and going, find the other thing. But don't think of any of them as a home run. I mean, you may get lucky and get a home run. I'm talking like, you know, you read about where they come up with this idea and they're living on a beach and they got millions of dollars in the bank. Probably realistically, most of the things are going to be somewhere between a few thousand dollars to $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. And you might find something in there that jumps up to one of them being $100,000 till you really start hitting resistance. Then you just switch over and you go somewhere. So you've got a choice of how you structure your income streams is how it's going to affect this cash flow. The standard American business is a nightmare with cash flow. It really is. Plus, you're going to be jumping into things most of the time where there's going to be less and less profit. That's why we talk about niches and blue ocean strategies and all that type of stuff in the course we've done. Niches. Or niche, if you're an educated person. But from the South, it's a niche. So you're trying to find these little holes and cubbies where there's, you know, $5,000, $10,000 there, $5,000, $10,000 there. And if you do those and you plan it right and you don't try to push it beyond where it goes from easy to stress, all of a sudden now things start working out a little bit easier for you and the cash flows are not as a big a deal. It really, really makes a difference. So there's two things I want you to take away from this second part. Once you get a business established, because you're going to have to work your butt off when you get started. Yesterday I was cruising around YouTube when I was out in the shop and I came where this video popped up and I hit play because it had a Hulk thing on there. And there was a phrase in there that I knew Jeff was going to pick up on immediately. And I shared that with him because I just wanted to see if it was going to register with him the way it registered with me. And it was a motivational type thing and it was based around weightlifting and stuff like that. And basically way this thing after like 30 seconds in, it says, you can either be a bitch or you can do the work. When you're starting your business, I promise you, you're going to have to do the work. But once it gets established and it starts kind of having a life of its own, that once then there's going to be that next level. You'll have to make the decision to grow it more. What does that mean? And you have to really know what that means before you make that decision. But you got to do the work. So just think, when I say when you get resistance, when you're starting off, it's all going to be resistance. You haven't done anything yet. You're in the trenches, man. You're digging. That's all you're doing at this point is digging, fighting, scratching, thinking, praying. But then it starts getting established. You start building some social capital. You start getting some people that actually care what you're doing. And then you'll hit the resistance again, where all of a sudden now you feel like you're in the trenches again. You can choose that. But I think you're better off to go find some virgin ground somewhere and be a little bit more creative with it. So I wanted to say that just because we talked about cash flow from more of a standard type business, you don't have to go that direction. You probably will some. Most businesses end up that way. Where the deer stuff and the hog stuff and the bear stuff, where that takes me as far as other revenue streams, I have no idea. I'm not concerned with it. Where the permaculture and regenerative farming side takes me, it's already showing that it can take me places. What's the size of those places? I don't know. But as that starts gathering some steam, I'll figure out where that resistance is, and I'm just going to back off of that a little bit, really work on the social capital to keep it at that level, keep up the quality, and then I'm going to be looking around and doing something else. Still be doing that. And then you've got to manage these revenue streams, because if you're going to go about it where you have several, you're going to have to manage your time. That's the reason I like more seasonal stuff, to put it in a seasonal way, because I can concentrate on one. I can go, that's over. And then I can go into the other one. It's fresh. It's new. It's exciting. And then glad that one's over. And then I get to start all over again. That works better for me. It's going to be harder if you're going to pick stuff. I mean, like, I can't imagine having five revenue streams that are all busting out, you know, November, December, and January, like we're trapping. Good grief, I'd be a mental nutcase trying to keep up with that. It wouldn't matter how much money I made. See, that's another thing. People that struggle for money, they always say, well, I wouldn't care what it would take to make that kind of money. You would eventually. You would eventually. So there has to be balance with all this stuff, is basically what I'm trying to say. But never forget that cash flow. Never forget that the water in the pool is either going to drown you or let you breathe. Because you can only hold your breath for so long.